In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, a panel I moderated at the FX International Convention in Orlando last month on breaking into comics. Five different creators were on the panel to discuss the ways that they got into the business. Among them, B. Clay Moore, who you know from the Atomic Revolver Studio. We just did a show with all those guys. Of course, Clay is famous for Hawaiian Dick, the leading man, currently working on 76 and the new Hawaiian Dick arc, and also for DC Comics, Superman Confidential, and an upcoming JSA Classified. Art Baltazar, the co-creator of Tiny Titans, and of course Patrick the Wolf Boy and Gorilla Gorilla and several other great children's favorites. From Top Shelf, three interesting creators, Andy Rutten of Owly fame, Christian Slade, who gave us the book Corgi, and Matt Kent, who we know from Pop Gun and Super Spy and other great stories. So they all have interesting perspectives, and it was a great panel. Unfortunately, I was only expecting three guests, and we had four microphones show up, and then two more guys came. We were happy to have them, and I know the crowd was happy that they were there, but some of the guys are talking slightly off mic, so the sound quality, you know, varies depending on who is talking. But you can hear everybody, and the conversation is very well worth listening to, so I hope you enjoy this presentation.
This panel is about breaking into comics, and my name is John Suntress, and I have a podcast that's online called WordBalloon.com, and WordBalloon is available on iTunes and also at Newsarama, and I'm very happy to have some of the pros here on the panel that can discuss breaking into comics, and I will do this NPR fashion, and start at the very end of the panel. We've got a writer who's been doing work for Image Comics and DC as well, and a little bit of Marvel. The creator of Hawaiian Dick and Battle Him, Mr. B. Clay Moore, and next to him we've got from Top Shelf a guy who did a few books. One of my personal favorites from last year, a great book called Super Spy, wonderful Cold War stories, and a great individual style, Matt Kent. And the creator of Corgi is with us as well, and I would have prepared a better introduction, but I'm glad that he's here on the panel to explain his books. But it's Mr. Christian Slade, and I'm very happy that Christian is here. And finally joining us, there's a couple more, and forgive me, I didn't know you were coming, so
no,
jump in.
Okay, yeah, I'm Andy Rutten.
Owly, ladies and gentlemen, great, I'm very happy Andy is here. Oh, pleasure to meet you, Andy, I'm sorry we haven't talked before, so this is great. And finally, a guy who's given us such characters as Patrick the Wolf Boy, and will be joining the DC Pantheon in February with his book Tiny Titans, Mr. Art Baltazar.
Oh yeah, man.
So this is great, and I'm glad because we really have a good representation of independent and also mainstream people, so this is a good opportunity for you guys. This is really more about you to ask your questions. So rather than waste, you know, our time just going through the perfunctory things, really I'd like to open it up to questions from the audience in terms of what you guys need to know to try and break into the business.
Anybody have any questions?
Anybody have any? And if not, we can roll. Believe it.
Short,
yeah, exactly. Thanks for coming. So, do you guys want to be writers? Do you want to be artists? Who wants to, of the group here, who wants to be writers? Show of hands. There's a writer, okay. The rest are artists? Aspiring artists? Very cool. And I really, you know, there's a good cross-section of ages as well, which I'm glad to see. Guys, am I right to assume that it is easier for artists to break in versus just writers? I mean, in terms of editors, maybe willing to see?
How artists could break in? Because I've been a writer-artist. Sorry. I only know how artists break in, but I know how artists who write their own stuff break in. So I don't know if I'm...
Go writers, for it.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of friends that are writers, and in terms of small press work, it's really, you're kind of on your own. You know, and so you kind of have to find an artist that you can work with that can give you something that'll be more of a finished product. Because artists and writer artists, cartoonists, we can create something that's a finished product, you know, and hand it out and say, hey, what do you think? And they can see it. Whereas writer, yeah, it's kind of hard to tell.
Sure.
Writers need artists. And I know they go through them a lot because I had a lot of friends growing up where they get an artist on their book and then he goes to work for somebody. And then they got to get a new artist.
Sure.
That's what happens all the time.
Good point. Yes, that's one of the things that I always tell. Not only did I come up through small Image, and first thing I did was Slave Labor, and then Owly, and then on the PC.
There you go.
But I spent a year at Image's PR and marketing coordinator, which meant that every time I went to, I got like 50 pitches from guys. Because image is seen as like the place to break in at this point for anything. I mean, it used to be guys who just wanted to draw Jim Lee stories.
Sure.
Now there's a little more diversity in what they're doing, so just get inundated. And most of them are unpublishable, but occasionally you find out in the rough. But to what I was saying, what I was telling writers is, A, don't just work with anybody who's going to work with you. B, make sure that they're as committed to create your own project that you're trying to take to a place like Amazon. Make sure they're as committed to the project as you are. By that, I mean, they have the same emotional investment in the project. And I really believe that if your idea is strong enough, you can find an artist of quality who will work on it with you. And if you have been trying forever to find somebody to work on it with you and nobody's interested, you might want to take another look at the project you're trying to finish. So,
okay.
But I that does happen all the time. You know, and it's always kind of a concern that you've got a really good, talented young artist working on a project and the money comes calling. And I've been fortunate enough, like the Hawaiian Dick, Stephen Ripper, who just runs from the mainstream. You know, I mean, he's had three Eisner nominations for Hawaiian Dick, and he's had a lot of. He wouldn't even answer email. Like, he wouldn't answer emails from Todd McFarlane.
Wow.
Trying to get him to do a book. Actually, it wasn't Todd McFarlane. It was the guy whose name sounds a lot.
It's Rod McEwen, actually, who did it. Yeah.
But he's had good opportunities to do good stuff that has been, it's either been work for hire, it's been a little too close to the mainstream for him, and so his reaction is just sort of run in the other direction. For me, it's fortunate because he's always willing to do this book, you know, do something with this book that he loves, but, you know, he could have probably just taken the money and be, you know, coloring for whatever.
So, well, on the other end of the spectrum, there are a lot of other, there are a lot of artists out there that don't like to write or can't write or don't want to, you know, but, you know, like a cartoonist like me, Matt, you know, and Christian, that's what we do. We write our own stories, we draw our own stories because it's what we love. I mean, I couldn't draw anybody else's stuff.
Okay.
It just wouldn't work, you know, because I don't have the passion. If I don't love it, I'm not going to draw it, you know. So,
yeah, you're right.
But a lot of people aren't like that. They love to draw other people's stuff. You know, so if you find something like that, you know, and a lot of people, you know, like, if you look at a comic and the art is beautiful but the story is terrible and you're a writer and you can see what to fix, contact that guy and say, hey, maybe we can work together, you know, or something like that.
And I'm assuming it's easier now, too, with the internet and things like digital webbing and what are some of these other places, crossroads for a writer to find an artist or an artist to find a writer?
Message boards and stuff like that.
And conventions, okay.
Where, yeah, I mean, go to Artist Alley at a convention. Look and see some of these artists that are, if you're a writer, and see what other people are doing. I mean, but conventions are the best way to get into the business.
I would say what he's talking about with bringing passion to your own project. One thing, as I do this, and a lot of writers just don't feel this way. They think that if they brought the idea to the table, it's their concept. But for me, if I'm doing a creator on a project and I bring an artist on board, it's now a complete 50-50 collaboration at that point. And anything he wants to, I mean, it'll shift from what I originally intended because for him to be emotionally invested, it's got to be as much his project as my project. And I mean, I've done books that completely changed direction from where I thought they might ever go because the artist brought his own ideas and sensibilities to the table. And I personally think that's really important if you're trying to break into a creator on board. You may have to give up a little bit, but ultimately, if you're both invested in it, the project is going to be that much stronger. And they'll be committed to it. So.
I'm curious about, like, let's start at the beginning with things like the pitch. From an art standpoint, or really what the package looks like to deliver to a given publisher, how many pages of art, how much story do you give away, things like that, and really let's start with a couple of the guys that haven't spoken yet, and I'll start with either Matt or Christian, whoever wants to start. So you leaning in, Matt? So yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I will say that before I did anything, I did my whole book, the first book I did, Pistol. I had all the art, and I wrote it, and I had all the art, and I actually mocked it up into what looked like the finished book. And Kinko's perfect lined it, and had the color cover, and I printed it on paper. I wanted the publisher to use it.
Yellow,
sort of like age paper or whatever, you know. So I had the whole thing done because nobody knew me. I went to San Diego and got an art gallery table, and I made like little packages. So I had an envelope that had the book in it, which looked like it was done. already and printed and published, which I only did 20 copies of it. I had that, and then like a little cover letter, and then some extra little, if you have a little fake cigarette with my website on it, you can pop on a little real smoke for it. Yeah, like, for came out. Yeah. I love those things. It's like a, and it's all foil on the end, it's real.
It's like,
that's great. But yeah, so I put all that together. But the main thing was having the book done and look like it was already ready to go, because it, like, talking to Chris and Brother talked about afterwards, it was easy for them to their imagination. It wasn't like they had to read a script and see one or two pages apart and then imagine what the rest would look like. It was all there.
He took all the risk out too for them, because it's a money, it's an investment.
Yeah,
they're
going to
put a lot of money into this thing. You know, as in small press, we don't get any upfront money.
Yeah.
You don't get money until the book's done. So if you're going to talk to a cartoonist who's going to say, yeah, I've got four pages and I'm going to do a book with you guys, it's like, great, when you get the book done, come back to us, you know? But it's a weird scenario where is the book good? Is the book going to be good? Do you want to encourage somebody that you don't know what the book's going to turn out like, you know? So I think Christian has a similar story.
The idea of, you know, a similar thing is I self-published at first for my book, but... you know, a lot of the stories are similar to, like, you know, what a lot of the other artists and writers said, where the convention circuit is a great opportunity, great place to where it happens, I think. Still, even in the digital age with websites, which you should still do anyway, I think, and the forums and everything, conventions seem to be where everyone gets together. It's, you show your work, whether, you know, whatever it is, and you can get feedback right there directly and form a face-to-face, you know, relationship, which is good. And a good impression. But yeah, as far as this, as breaking in, it's almost like, in a broader sense, I think it's all learnable. None of this stuff is like, I don't think it should be, no matter where you are and as a creator, it shouldn't be so, from my perspective, writers should write, you know, artists should just draw. I think it's very gray, and I think it's all learnable. You know, I think storytelling from both ends is learnable, because My book is storytelling, but yet there's no words in it. And same thing with Allie, Andy's book. It's storytelling, so he's writing it. You know, I'm writing it. Andy's writing it, but yet there's no words in the book, but it's still written. So, you know, the line is pretty vague there. So I think, you know, whatever you want to do, you study both ends, you know, but to focus just on one, it ends up being flat. You know, if you just do the art, it ends up, you can only take the reader so far, and then it kind of falls. If you just write, you know, I think there's no problem with crossing the lines. I don't have a problem with, you know, because it's all learnable. Anyone can learn how to draw. Anyone can learn how to write and tell stories. It's thing, and just do it, you know. And you got to think. And I think the people that are doing well, at least for me and that I've talked to, they do it because they want to do it first and foremost, right?
And that's all you can do.
Especially in the beginning when you're doing the books, and you could, you know, a lot of eighth grade, seventh grade, whatever. It's in the beginning. You do a little. In the corner of your math notebook, you do a little story, and that's self-publishing. You know, you got a 45-minute math class, and I did this little story about my teacher who was driving in a car and tried to eat a fly while she was driving the car. That story, but I did, you know, that's storytelling. So that's publishing, because even though there's one copy, but it's publishing. And then you can go to Kinko's, and you make your little zines, or you do, but that's self-publishing. See, I think you do it because you want to do it, and then, like, that's why I self-published my book, and I took it to... I just was at a convention, and I only talked to one person at Top Shelf booth 2 years ago at MegaCon. I just walked by and said, oh, here's my book. I only have, and I talked to him for a minute, literally. And he gave me a business card, and then I mailed that in to Top Shelf, and they accepted the book, and now it's a series, and that's exciting. Because originally when I did Corgi, the first book, it was supposed to just be a one-shot, and I had the idea that I could build it out. But even that, I wasn't fixed on, oh, this is only one book, you know. So when they came to me and said, would you be interested in a series? I said, sure, you know, and let's build it out. So I welcome the challenge, you know. So, but yeah.
The more you do it, the more you'll learn, the better you'll get.
Yeah.
And you're not going to become an awesome artist in a year. It might take you 10 years, 8 years, 5 years, 3 years, whatever, but you got to do it all the time.
Repetition. Repetition.
I think mini comics, too, is a good way to start. Like, I did three or four mini comics that were like, these are big, fat, 100-page mini comics or something. Yeah, and then you put this down, you take a yearbook of the comic shop, and then put like five copies of it, and then see if it sells, if it sells, if it sells, if it be, and
and still, as opposed to websites, because I'm just asking the question, and I'm assuming I'm going to know the answer to this, but you know, it is better to hold them, hand them the tangible mini comic versus here's a link to.
It's very important in the industry. People need to see you a lot. They want to see your work a lot. You got to create, like, for years, every time I would go to a show, I have to have something new. If you don't have something new, you feel like nobody's going to care. You got to show them something new, even if it's just a pin-up page or whatever you can get done.
You're always
so
producing.
Presence and consistency, very, very, very important.
One thing people get way too hung up on, this and I shouldn't annoy me, but I have a message board on the Image Comics boards, and there's a thread on Image. Image accounts are a very simple guideline on what you need to give them to submit something. It's very simple. It's not complicated at all. But there's like a 75-page thread with people asking questions because they can't figure this out. What people need to understand, it's not so much about the presentation in terms of, am I, you know...
Saddle stitch? Or
yeah, am I following you? Oh, I accidentally sent 6 pages and they asked for 5. Yeah. Ultimately, the work is what's going to sell the project. So, I just mentioned that because I just looked at this thread, and Eric Waters is the publisher at Imaging. I don't even... goes into these threads and answers these questions time and time again. And like the Hawaiian Dick was picked up an image I wasn't even going to pitch it to them, so I had no idea what their guidelines were. I mean, it was like Jim Valentino was the publisher and walked by and he hated getting stuff. I was talking only about it, some other people, and I handed it to him. He kind of rolled his eyes at me and walked off. But, you know, they just flipped through and what we had there. They didn't, you know, they didn't sit down and go, wait a minute, you know, there's black and white here, there's color, this isn't how we format it. They liked what they saw. That's basically all there was to it. And, you know, a couple weeks later, they asked us what we wanted to do. It was awesome. You know, but ultimately we realized, man, just the work is strong. You're not going to get rejected because you didn't follow somebody's, you know, to-the-letter guidelines. Ultimately, you've got to do the work and show them enough of the story that they understand where it's going. And if it's, if they like it, they like it.
Also, an artist, it's very important that an artist... I know everyone has their idols. It could be any Jack Kirby, John Byrne, Jim Lee, whoever it is. And I know a lot of young guys start out drawing like the guy that they want to be like. Eventually, you have to figure out what your strengths are and what you are. And I was one of those guys trying to draw Batman, Spider-Man, and finally someone told me that, why are you drawing this? You're a cartoonist. You're a cartoonist. And so once you switch over and you finally figure out who you are, and you draw your own style, you can't be wrong anymore, because now you become a style where you take a Picasso or a Rembrandt, and who's a better artist? They're both totally different guys, totally different artwork. But Picasso makes stuff with girls with 3 eyes and 2 pairs of lips and their hair and, you know, 1 shoe, and the Rembrandt will paint his mother beautifully, you know? So who's better? I don't know. So that's what kind of you have to figure out. You have to find your inner Picasso and become to stylize the hell out of yourself. And when they see that, they won't see anything wrong with your drawings.
Yeah.
And they'll just see it. That's the way it looks.
Well, that's a great point. And it's more about the process. So you find who you are.
Yeah.
But you also, at the same time, it doesn't hurt to be aware of what's out there in art history.
Yeah.
And then you go through all that as you study it, and then you figure out who you are. And draw not just so much in the style, but also your subject matter.
Exactly.
You know exactly what the story is all about.
I mean, that's just like me. I mean, I'm not an anatomy expert. I can never do that. But like when I got the Alex Delcaro comics from Marvel. I was like, okay. And the thing was, anytime I drawn people, I got instantly bored. I just hated it. I hated drawing people. And I was like, you know what? Guess what? I don't draw people well. I hate it. And so my comics don't have people in it for that reason.
No,
it's all on
animals.
I hate animals. See, we're bizarre.
Well, when you draw people, then you got to draw furniture.
Yeah.
People sitting in the background and stuff, and pillowcases and curtains, and like, the guy's just sleeping. You got to draw the whole room, you know?
But I wanted to say something about breaking it. The one thing that's important to know in comics is that it's very low-tech industry. I mean, just a couple years ago, hardly anybody had email addresses or websites or anything like that. It's just a very slow to adopt new technology kind of, even though we use computers all the time, you know, in our work and everything, it's just not, it's, the industry is very low tech. It's all about face-to-face. And but the other thing is that with the comic, if you make a mini comic, guess what? You're in comics.
Yeah.
You're
in. Broke in.
You just broke in. Nobody has to give you permission to break into comics. You are in comics.
You sell one book, you're successful.
That's right.
You don't even have to sell.
You just make it. Yeah.
You just make it.
That makes you do the selling.
Well, yeah, that's honestly commercialism has to figure into success and yes, making that second book. So you know, affording the ability to follow up and continue to do it.
Yeah,
and
there's not, just so you know, there's no money in comics. There's no money in comics.
Well, yeah, honestly, and that's a kind of realistic response.
You're not going to get rich. You can make a living in comics, okay?
But, yeah, that's good parameters there, Andy, yeah.
You know, so.
Okay.
It's just that it's not, I mean, I went from having a very high-paying job that I hated to doing comics, which I love.
What was your high-paying job, Andy?
I was a graphic designer.
Okay.
Interface designer for Motorola.
Sure, okay.
But that was it.
I failed at a lot of poorly-paying jobs.
Yeah, no,
I only had maybe more money in comics than I ever did.
Yeah.
My wife made me quit on my jobs and just tell me, why don't you stay on the job?
Yard's got a very cool wife. Matt and Christian, really, what were you guys doing before you were able to do this full time?
I would work when I was in college. I worked in kitchens. I cooked.
Sure.
I started cooking when I was 11 years old, actually.
Good for you, man.
And always worked. And then I would always, I remember my folks were always like, why don't you work in a bookstore? At least, you know, you're not, you know, burning yourself and everything. Well, I liked cooking, but I used it as a motivator, actually. Yeah. So I'd actually work on the weekends, I'd cook, and then I came home. And I would actually, in the car ride home, I'd be like, man, that was brutal. I hope I don't have to do that every day. So then I'd work all week long. Like, I would always take, I wasn't the best in the class, but I did I wanted to at least do twice the amount of work as the busiest person in the class. So I produced the most. So what happened was halfway through, I started doing caricatures at SeaWorld, right by here, actually, on weekends in college. So I went from the kitchen, from TGI Fridays, where was that? And I went to doing caricatures at SeaWorld, and it was a job drawing. And that, to me, was great.
Yeah.
So from then on, it's just been, I went into illustration and animation and now comics. So it's wherever I could make money doing drawing. So for me, that's where my center is, you know. And so that's it, you know.
I had character jobs, too. Those were the worst jobs. Like, I would not do any of the main characters. It's where I never do again. My master plan was to do, like, I went to art school and I wanted to be a comic artist. Whole time that my parents were like, there's no one, you know, you gotta make a living, you gotta move out of house when you graduate. I'm like, okay, so my master plan was to just get like graphic design experience and do it. So I did graphic design for like 10 years. And then just to kind of spend my spare time until the comics could take over. Like I could make as much money with the comics as I did doing design. And then I got laid off, so technically I didn't quit. I got laid off. But, yeah, and then I was like, hey, well, this is great. You know, all of a sudden I can make a living. If I was doing comics during the day, all day, instead of doing my day job, I could make a living doing comics. So I just started doing that. And then the good thing about the graphic design, I know you were saying with you, that you can do everything. Like, if you're writing design and you know design, then you can do that. Like, I put my whole book together. I know you put all the comics together. So you're not dependent on anyone for anything. Like, you know, and the publisher appreciates it, at least that's how it does. They don't have to do anything. I pay the printing bill, and I do the rest. So,
I'm the only guy here who's not
an artist.
Well, I actually did a comic strip in college, that's kind of what I realized I didn't have the discipline to be a student at an artist.
You can actually draw. I mean, look, you can draw noodles. I mean, there's some people I know, Roger Deddy, who's a very good writer. You can't draw.
Yeah. Well, I think it helps that I personally think fairly visually as well, which I think helps. But aside from that, well, actually, the way I get into comics is because I used to draw in fanzine, and a friend of mine named Jay Torres, who writes for DC now, a lot of nice stuff. We were friends, and he was pitching a book to Slave Labor Graphics called Love in Tights, which was
Yeah. Remember that? Absolutely.
Yeah, which is a superhero romance pastiche. And he actually, how many of you remember this, but he actually asked me about drawing in the book initially. And I was like, really? You know? And I thought he was asking about writing. I was confused. And anyway, so I ended up writing some, well, I actually, he, I ended up doing a whole book basically for that, but I edited it for 6 issues. And I kind of realized, it was like, all of a sudden, like, wait, it was like you said, I was like, I'm going to cons, I'm wearing pro beds, I'm meeting really creative people who do this. It's like, oh, I'm making comics, you know?
Yeah.
And the more you kind of start to realize how it works, it's like, yeah, it's like I granted myself permission to pursue it. And once I pointed, it came a couple years after that, because I knew I wanted to do a book that I personally wanted to do, regardless of what the market told me I should do. And that book was, I think, such a personal kind of deal and kind of unique for comics, because it opened up all these doors, and it's like people want to draw Batman, they want to draw Superman, so they draw Batman, Superman, they show people Superman and Batman stuff. Well, the way I got to write like a Superman was by doing a book about a 50s detective in Hawaii, you know, and Janet Jones in D.C. is the only Superman. And when she, you know, like you said, it's my relationship, she called me up one day and said, hey, are you interested in, you know, writing D.C.
Sure.
You know? And it wasn't because I was like doing Superman stories and sending them in or Batman. I think if you stay true to yourself and everything, you'll be surprised. And they'll see that you can bring something different to what they have to do than just guys who have just read Superman comics their whole lives. You know what?
Did anyone up here try to do the mainstream? You know, did you guys first start with any type of I want to do my Superman story before coming up with your original ideas? I mean, we're independent heavy here with this panel. I mean,
I tried to do, actually, I loved G.I. Joe when I was growing up.
Sure, sure.
So, I mean, that's...
Did you approach Devil's Due or whoever, or I guess back then it was Marvel or somebody who probably had...
Marvel. But I was like, I knew I wasn't good enough to do that, but I tried to do some stuff like that with one of my friends. There's a webcomic, James Mason, and it was like, I think I can do this story. It was these ninjas, and I was drawing it, and I was drawing it halfway through, and I had the character designs down. It was, but you know what? It wasn't me.
Okay.
I could tell it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And I actually stopped, and I got so frustrated, and I drew the first little alley story out in just frustration. And but I didn't think of it as that. I was like, oh, I want to do something more like this. I didn't realize I could, you know,
okay.
Because I was just trying to do regular comics, and then I found Top Shelf, I found independent press stuff, and I was like, there's all kinds of comics out there. You can do whatever you want. And I just, you know, because you get kind of pigeonholed into what you think comics are and
sure.
stuff like that. And that's the one thing great about conventions, you see how broad everything is. From the web or from even your local comic shop, depends on how good your local comic shop is. What kind of books do they have? Do you know all the comics that are out there? Probably not.
No, definitely not. No, and all you have to do is look at previews, and even previews doesn't represent everything that's out there. And I mean, my God, it's the size of a phone book every month, and there are literally hundreds of books in there. And then, as you say, that's not everything.
And the reality is, this book will appeal to a much broader audience.
Glad you said that.
It's crazy that we think of this as marginalized.
What we call mainstream versus what truly is mainstream. And Andy, you're a perfect example of that. And art as well.
When I did a comic book about a detective, it was like, what the hell is this? You know, it's like, well, it's like stuff you see in every other genre.
Right, or every week on television or in films, yeah.
Now, I gave that to my, you signed a copy for me a couple of years ago, I gave it to my 7-year-old daughter, you know, as like an introduction into how storytelling works, she'd be like, Dad, you know, I can... It's my job now to figure, you know, see if I can figure out what happens here without the words. It's like,
But the reason I did that is because I didn't consider myself a writer, you know? So I didn't write any dialogue.
It's like a primer on storytelling.
Yeah, but I didn't write any dialogue because I was like, everything, I actually tried to write a story with dialogue. It was absolutely terrible. I actually gave one to Mike Mignola. I hope he never looked at it. But it was really, I was being humble fan. But it was like, everything I wrote was... No, it was all aliens. The thing was that it was all these, like, recycled jokes, you know, like, oh, that had to hurt, you know, that kind of stuff that you actually, unfortunately, still see in comics. But I realized that was weak, and I just worked around it, you know, and that's what you got. You just got to embrace the stuff, you know. I love silent books, you know, G.I. Joe, Silent Hill,
sure.
was like one of my Christian's favorite comics growing up, and like, I didn't realize it, but it was like, that was a big, big impact.
That was, yeah.
You know, and so now we write silent books.
Yeah. That's cool.
I can almost directly trace it back to that issue.
That's so funny.
You know?
It'd be funny how many comedians couldn't draw a book without words. You can make sense of it. I think fans would be shocked. Storytelling.
And that book was inspired by Steranko doing that in S.H.I.E.L.D. in Marvel 20 years before. Yeah, there you go. Well, you guys are pups, and that's why. You know, hard nose. Hard nose.
Yeah, I've heard references to that.
Oh, yeah.
In a broader sense, it's like, I've heard it before in terms of just artwork. You know, there's a market for anything. So it's like, instead of trying to focus on, well, I want to do work that's going to get in, you know, this place, whether it's a gallery or a publishing company, it's like, do the work that you care about, okay? And then you'll find the market. Then you'll find the venue later on.
Yeah.
But start with what you care about. Then don't worry about where it's going to go. It'll find its place if it's good enough or it's meant to be and you're passionate about. But start with the work.
Do what comes out of you. Don't try to change. Just,
I know guys who draw up some real comics and just complain about what they're drawing all the time. And I'm like, well, I don't... You know, and they don't even be super... They won't even, like, try to draw the superhero stuff. They draw what they're supposed to draw.
Well, I'm curious from the audience standpoint, what you, like, do you guys have, and I don't want to steal anybody's idea, and I'm not asking you to disclose, but do you have ideas? Do you guys have basic character ideas or plots and stories or genres that you guys want to do? Do people want to write in the audience? Are you looking to write superhero stuff? Are you looking to write independent stuff? I nothing? Sir? Cool.
I'm working in comics too.
Yeah. There you go.
You know, so you're
oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you're in this world of characters all the time, so you're constantly thinking of characters, flashpoints, where your character coming from, where you're going.
Well, and I'm glad that Clay and Matt are next to each other because I enjoy both their stories and they're the same genre in some cases, but such different approaches. And it really is exciting to see that. And you know, yeah, I mean, Matt, did you ever, you know, what was your influences on your stuff? I mean,
I don't. To me, all my mini comics I did before, like Pistol Whip and Super Spy, all that stuff was sort of autobiographical. And in high school, coming out of high school, I've been reading a lot of Harvey Kuppler and
sure.
Other like sort of day to day, kind of miserable stories. And so then my first few mini comics were like that. I probably did like 200-300 pages worth of that kind of story. And then, after a while, after 200-300 pages of that, doing that art started to get me down. One thing I was just out of high school and I had a religious officer, so what is nothing interesting in my life at home? So what am I going to really write about? And then another thing is like, your comments were sad and they're making me, they're bumming me out of real life.
Yeah. Once you're done, they're all about your mom,
I just made a list of things I like. I don't want the guy in the dynasty to under the water. I want a detective that isn't very good at it. And I want
I like bears.
A mystery woman. just stuff I wanted to draw and things I wanted to see in the story. And then I made a story. That was my first book. Like that.
That is literally exactly how I came up with Wanting Dick. I said, all I said was, what do I like? Screw what anybody else likes, you know. And I was like, I like film noir, I like 50s jazz, I like Tiki Kitsch, I like the Rockford Files, and I like and I like 50s because there's this dichotomy. But anyway, so I was like, well, how can I make all this work, you know? And I just, it was like a big melting pot. And then I found Stephen Griffin, who may not have been all that into it, but just kind of brought his own craziness into the picture. And, you know, I figure somebody must like it. I mean, you know, that stuff is super cool because of the same kind of thing. It's like, who doesn't like that kind of stuff? You know,
you got to be careful, though, because that first little comic I did was about these aliens and it had a Powerpuff Girls aspect to it. I was combining all these things I liked, you know? And I was like, oh, this is going to work out great. I got aliens, I got, like, You know, I got this cool kind of style. Everybody's beating everybody up. And I was like, when it came down to actually making the fight sequences, I realized that's not how I would solve problems. And I was like,
so they all sent him.
No, they didn't. No, but I was drawn it, and it didn't work. I was like, this isn't really okay.
Okay.
All right, let's strip away all the stuff that I think I like. You know, okay, what do I really like? Oh, I like being outside. I like doing this stuff. What are the things I want to draw? I want to draw this. That's me. It's like I was trying to find something where it's like, oh, this is all the things that I think are cool about me. It's like, you know, it's not.
It's about self-awareness.
Yeah,
it's amazing. You guys are like,
you have to learn that, you know. So
I think there's a lot of guys out there probably dying drawing stuff they don't like right now. But
yeah.
I wish they had the guts to kind of at some point step away from that and go, well, let's just figure out what I'm really.
Yeah,
you can succeed.
Like, I can't kind of crazy enough to me. In my other job, I was like that. I thought that everybody hated corporate world, but you know what? Actually, everybody else but me at that place actually loved me.
Yep.
And I didn't realize that. And I was really depressed, and I didn't, you know, that wasn't me.
Dude, what are you talking? You got health benefits. 9 to 5. It's great.
But it's just
right. I'm with you. I'm with you, man. That's why I'm in radio.
Ace Hardware tags.
Oh, God.
Sunday papers. I did it for 3 months, and I looked at the computer, and I just got up, and I asked, where's the boss? Where's the owner's office? President of the company. Okay, when is it open? Not on the door. Sat down. I go, I'm Mark. He says, what's wrong? Well, I never met you before. I sat down there. I had my portfolio with me all the time, you know. I said, can I show you my portfolio? Yeah. Showed it to him. And he's looking at me, wow, you did all this? Yeah. He goes, what, you draw comic books? And I was, yeah. He goes, why are you working here? And I'm like, no, I'm going to quit. I'm going to go. I said, when you quit? Right now. Can I just go home now? And he's like, yeah, well, good meeting you finally. He came out with me, was there, invited you home. They're like, what's he doing with the boss?
I was selling frozen food in home, okay, and people don't want to buy anything in home, right? And I went into, and I just...
You went delivery?
Yeah, no, I would go in, and it's a great service, but I would...
No, really?
I would go in, I would... No, it was like a quality...
Amway?
No,
yeah, really.
It was like, we would sell quality games, basically.
Oh,
like Omaha Steaks and everything?
Forget what I was doing.
All right.
I was selling something. And I went into private call. And I shut the door and I said, Tom, I gotta be honest with you, I just don't think this is working. He goes, you know, and actually he got up and he shut the door and he said, I don't think it is either. He said, let's talk about this. I said, what do you want to do? I said, well, you know, I like doing creative stuff and I write. He said, here's what you do. You do whatever the hell you want to do. And if somebody doesn't like it, you tell them to F off. And I said, all right, Tom, I think, you know, and he said, you know, if you want to come back and work here, the door is open, but I don't think this is for you, you know, because it's not what you love, you know. And and he was the best salesman I've ever known in my life, but he loved sales.
That was him. In front of Mitch.
Well, yeah, it was.
Sure, sure.
It was fantastic, you know. And I learned a lot that helped me in this business through doing the sales.
Yeah.
But the only thing I could ever sell was myself. I could get a job, you know, no problem. And once it came to selling the stuff, it was like, you know, I sold a lot of stuff, you know. But it was
a lot of work.
But it was cool to have a boss, to work for a guy who had found his niche and realized that, you know, rather than have a guy I think could work here effectively, go do your own thing. So.
Yeah, you got to do your own thing.
No, it's start.
You're happy, all right?
Yeah, I was a lot safer.
I want to point out that, like, and I'm glad there are other publishers that support some of these independent projects that are represented here on the panel, but I really do find it interesting that your style has found its way to D.C.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, and it's, you know, I mean, so...
Yeah, I did the Patrick the Wolf Boy and...
Gorilla.
I've been drawing comics, my own comics, self-published this in 1994, and I got dropped from... Somewhere, somebody dropped me 3 times from their catalog. I don't know. I forgot what it was. But anyway, somehow, a few months ago, I'm on the cover now. But, you know, but I was just, you put out your books, you got to officially make your company name, you drop it from the catalog, you reinvent your company, come back again.
He's talking about previews, if you guys don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, yeah. So, and the irony now.
Keep showing up. I was doing conventions in about 92, my first one coming out in 94, and I never stopped. And then somehow I draw these little silly characters for everybody, and everyone's buying them from me. I don't realize that they're working in the industry. So people like are sending people over. So finally, I made friends with Jan Jones. She's real famous.
It's one of DC's.
She was a big fan of my comic. And so finally, she has this collection of comics. And I never, ever knew what she did. And she called me out of the blue and said, I love your books. This is Jan. Oh, yeah, I remember you. And, you know, she asked me if I wanted a job at DC. I'm like, yeah, why not? And she said, well, I could hire you now. What? You never told me you worked at DC? And then it was funny because when I went to the DC offices, I got the little tour, and everyone had my drawings. And
oh, that's really cool. That's
did
nice.
You draw this Flash? I go, yeah, that's me. Can I draw that? No, that's cool. But you know, that's how it worked, and she just loved my comic, and they said, we want you to draw a book for us, but it has to be just like Patrick the Wolf White, but with our characters. I'm like, that's good.
Like, I mean, he's been doing it at cons.
I like Teen Titans. All right.
Well, and think about that. I mean, really, everything that these guys have been saying, it's the combination of, you know, stay true to who you are, persistence, and, you know, really, and not deviating from what you want to do. And really, yeah, staying true to yourself. And, I mean, that's really any goal like that. And, I mean, you know.
One person to like your stuff.
The right person.
And then you never know. I mean, I met people who were real famous, and I never knew. Like, I had dinner one time with the whole creative team of the Hulk. I had no idea that they did the Hulk. And I was like, do you read the Hulk? Yeah, every month. Well, I drew it. You did? Don't you look at the, I don't look at the names. I buy books. I like the Hulk. I know this guy isn't an advertiser. He's a horror writer. I know him. But, you know, Bruce Jones' name. I had no idea who the guys were.
Oh, that's awesome.
There, he goes, I've been eating the Hulk for 25 years.
Well, it helps to get to know people.
Job,
it helps to get to know people like that, though. It's not. Yeah. Man, I'll tell you this. The door knockers who just, like, pound on the door regardless of who's in the office, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The guys who call editors that barely know them every other day, you know, pester them. I think, like, Jan is really cool. She's, like, awesome. Fun, you know, she loved my book, and that's why I got to know her, you know?
Yeah.
So one day when she calls, and, you know, it wasn't like, oh, Jan, you know, maybe she's, so I should get, you know.
Right, well, it's not like, it's not about fake relationships.
I like the people in the comics a lot better than
you. Yes.
I mean, it's just,
well, yeah, and honestly, like, I want to ask you guys as well, because, I mean, I've given the DC Now example and stuff, but really, Andy, like, you know, what do you think made Ali click for...
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, well, the thing was is that I went to this panel with Brian Stelfreeze about, you know, breaking into comics, but they were very mainstream for you.
Okay.
Said, look, okay, show four pages. So this is like, if you're an artist showing to other work of other artists, if you show four pages of sequential art, they'll be able to understand where you need to work on stuff and things like that. So, like, what I did is I took that story I had written while I was working on that ninja story, and I made it into a four-page Owly story.
Okay.
And I actually came down to Megaton because Top Shelf was going to be there. And, I had bought some Top Shelf books, and I was reading them, and I was like, wow. And it gave me the courage to do my own thing. So I took that Owly story. I was like, you know what? I'm going to show him what I can do. And I took that out, Howie, and I made it into a four-page story. I took it to Chris, and I showed it to him, and I was like, I didn't know how it worked. I thought, like, you know, you got signed, and you're like, oh, yeah, that'd be great. You should do it. Go for it, you know? But you know, like Rob Liefeld of Wizard World or something like that, you know, getting signed, you know. But that's not the way it works. I mean, so I showed him this four-page story, and he was like, this is, I just wanted to get feedback. Because I love their books. That's the whole point. You know, I wasn't trying to break in.
Not
like,
in the
hey,
back of your head. You didn't.
Well, no, I actually said I'd just like to get some feedback because I thought it was way away from getting in, you know? And he said, actually, this is really beautiful. You should do more of this. That's all I got, you know? But he just encouraged me to do more. So I would do longer stories. I did a 16-page story. I showed it to him. He was like, this is good. You might want to work better with this and look at the way your pages, you know? You might want to have the reveal on the page turn, and you might want to do... You know, little things, little storytelling things where I was like, wow. So, you know, I was talking to Chris Starr, I was the editor.
Yes.
You know, and he was giving me editorial advice before I was even with them or anything like that. And then I worked on the next story, and I was actually packing boxes for them because they're in Atlanta and I'm in Atlanta.
Okay.
And I showed them the story I was working on. They gave me some tips. And, like, I showed them that finished story, and I showed it to him, and, like, he was like, actually, we're going up to SPX. Do you want to come with us? You can sit at our table. And I was like, sure. And he's like, how many books have you made up? I had made like three on my inkjet printer. And he's like, yeah, you should probably make some more. And I was like, well, how many do you think I should have? And he's like, don't know, 150 or something, you're really going to sell. And I was like, okay, I'm going to have to figure out how to do that, you know, and so I had to figure out how to do
all
that.
All night, I'm going to
yeah.
I am done.
And I got, you know, I had to drive up there on 3 hours sleep, you know, but it was, I did it, and they all sold out at SPX, and then I just kept working on other stories, and eventually they had enough, to, and they were like, hey, we're going to collect them. So.
Christian, tell your breakthrough story.
Yeah, I actually did, this is my master's thesis for just a master's degree in illustration.
And, which school?
Syracuse University.
Okay.
And I self-published it, and like I got like 300 of them, and then I just gave them out to friends and family, and then I got Artist Alley table here at MegaCon, and I printed it at a local printer. It's like a Kinko's, you know, and I just had it up, and I... That, you know, and the dealing with the printer was brutal. I couldn't handle it. I like new experiences, but I you know, I know what I like, and it wasn't that. So it just was a lot of headaches. So I was, you know, I just walked by the Top Shelf booth, and I just showed it to Rob Vendetti, who was there, and I said, "What do you think? It's a wordless book. It's all ages." I go, "I know you guys do Alley," and he's like, "Yeah, well, send it in." You know, and I go, "Okay." I literally talked to him for a minute. It wasn't even that. It was real busy. And I just sent it in blind and to Top Shelf because I went to the comic shop and pulled the books off shelves at random. And the ones they all that I liked that looked the most attractive and well-designed were the tales of Top Shelf. So I said, oh, okay, well, I can see Corgi like that. So I sent it in, and then they just took it. So and then we were jamming right after that. And I'm just getting started. The book just came out in May. So I'm working on book two now, and we're planning to do a book a year. I'm working on the first 9 books right now. My wife and I write them, and then I draw them. But that's it. You know, I feel like I really, you know, I've broken through in the sense that I have a published book in front of me, but I feel like I haven't even made a dent in what I feel like I could do as a storyteller. So it never ends. There's always something to do, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's no arrival. You're always trying to get it better and better. So.
Well, and is it hard to keep the excitement once the breakthrough happens?
Well,
and I mean, eventually it does become the job.
Well, the one thing now as a designer, I actually felt like I maxed out in design, where it was like everything I did when I was at the company I was at was like, when I would try to do something new, they're like, no, just do that other thing you did, but make it green this time. Yeah. I don't want to do the same thing over and over, and I actually loved the fact that Thomas, I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know. I had so much to learn, and that's what excites me, and I still feel that way. But you know, you have to keep going. The other thing you have to worry about is you have to keep your fires burning with the passion you had on that first
one. Right. Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Suddenly you're going to conventions all the time. And, you know,
sure.
I think it's easier once you see your first book out because others realize that they are coming in for real and then have more people see it. So then you spend more time on the panels because you're like, well,
that's true, but I'm actually slowed down because that affects your productivity, you know, like I used to be able to do 4 pages a day, and now I can do 1 page a day.
You want to know how many I do a day.
Really?
17, I did
it. Wow!
I get a good Friday night sleep Saturday morning.
Just
whole book of that weekend.
A third of a book.
Yeah.
Five
more blocks.
Where does research come in as far as story for you guys who are doing, you know, the less... Like, you know, it's funny, Matt and I talked last night about Super Spy, and you were telling me, Matt, as far as you were doing historical research, and Clay, you've mentioned, obviously, your pop culture love kind of informs your storytelling. What about things like Corgi and Ollie, and really, even Patrick, and some of the silly stories and stuff? And I say that euphemistically, but really, like, where do the stories, can you quantify where the stories come from?
Most of the time, I create a character, and it seems like the character takes over.
Okay.
Like, I create Patrick. And he did everything. I just helped work there. Like he growls, he chases squirrels, climbs trees, yells at the neighbor lady, throws water on her, stuff like that. So I'm like, what's he gonna do?
That's a good question.
I'm not sure. I think
it's him.
You know, at first, he was a wolf boy because his name's Patrick. My brother's name's Patrick, and he lives in the Guatemalan jungle, sleeping in hammocks for a while. So I called him. In the first issue, you meet Patrick the Jungle Boy, first Patrick the Wolf Boy, so I kind of based on him a little bit, but after a while, the character just starts writing itself, and then you always need an interaction with another character. It's like you got Ollie and a little worm. You need that worm. Otherwise, you're not going to have a story. You won't have a story without somebody.
Sure.
Like, he chases the squirrel, he hangs out with dad, or he hangs out with a little girl that had a crush on him. But without another character, they could be a little a fly. So at least somebody's interacting with him. Unless he's, I don't know what else to do. You need at least two. So he created a wolf boy. They're like, all right, now what's he going to do? He's going to hang out with his dad. And so the adventure continues, right? Going to the country, go camping. You know, so it's just, what would he do, you know? And then camping, he'd probably hang out with the bears, figure out a way to take his fish, you know? He'd jump on a reindeer, you know?
Yeah, it does,
you know? He's scared of reindeer, he starts looking at Santa Claus, you know? And not, you know, stuff like that. So,
that's cool.
That's what I feel about, like, more sort of, you know, human realistic adventure stuff, genre stuff. If I can't hear, if I don't know what the character's going to do or whatever, I realize that. I don't understand the character. It's like they live up in your head.
Sure.
Yeah.
And like dialogue and speech patterns and stuff. They're already, I can't even explain. It's like they're already there. It's like an intuitive thing. Yeah. If you know the character, it's all, you know what's going to happen. Yeah. There's no, you don't sit there and ponder and say, does this sound right? Because you know what their voice is.
And that taps into, if to take it further up, it's because you did what you love. You did what you know.
Yeah.
You draw what you know, write about what you know. Well, I know Andy has appreciation for birds. So it's no surprise that that's a common theme in the story. I have two of these dogs, actually. So for me, it was like no-brainer, you know, no reverence. I love the woods, and so the setting is like a woodland fantasy. So, you know, for me, it's that I got to draw this. I got 7 years to do 9 books. I better like the subject matter. So for me, it's like, can I realistically say to myself, can I draw the woods, and can I draw these corgi dogs for 9 years or 7 years or whatever. So,
but that's the thing. You know? You've got it in front of you all the time. It's like, I'm always watching the birds. I'm always outside. I'm always doing this stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't need to research what a chickadee looks like to draw. It's like,
it's all there.
Know.
Yeah.
I already knew what they looked like. I've been studying it for years. I know what they, how they interact with things. It's like,
how awesome is it with your job? When you were literally watching birds, it's part of what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's
cool.
Write off those birds, yeah.
Bird feeder.
Like, birds. I want that tax from that.
Nobody can complain about you staring in your
your bird feed. Actually, it is.
Every movie.
There you go.
Oh, there's HBO.
Every DVD about it.
And again, I want to throw it to the audience if there are any. If, again, some of this discussion has influenced any questions you guys might have, because I don't want to close you off. I think we're getting good information here, and I think it is kind of, you know. But, yeah, honestly, so, yeah, please don't feel like we're closed off and just having this conversation. So we do want to open it to you guys if you have any questions. So, what's up, man? Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask about digital versus, we kind of, you know.
It's an odd thing. I know a lot of my friends are webcomic guys. They're two different cultures, and there's a little bit of an overlap, and there, you know, like somebody like Scott Kurtz is proof of that, but it's just a different kind of thing.
Are you concerned, though, because, you know, it's with Amazon coming out with the Kindle, and I know writers who are really concerned that we are moving towards less of a paper society, just from really a, you know, ecological standpoint as well. And
I don't mind that, but the thing is that until you have something you can actually flip through. I mean, when I was reading comics as a kid, part of it, you know, when you're like flipping through a comic book and you can actually you peek and see what's happening, and you're like, you know, so you're like, oh, I gotta figure out how to do it. I gotta wait, you know, and like you can't get that feeling digitally. But a lot of the thing about web comics is that every day.
Yeah.
That's the one side of the best. You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's tough.
The webcomics have too many words. It's like real easy to skip over. I love like a volume of web. You see a pound, pound, pound.
But I couldn't do it every day.
It's tough.
And you can do both, though. I mean, you can do a webcomic, you know, you start with, because from an economical standpoint, it makes more sense. And you could, who's to say you can't turn that into a print?
Sure.
Later on.
Sure.
Or
the whole point is you're working. If you're working,
Just keep doing it.
If you get better, that's great. You know, why not?
Clay, I saw you.
Super Spy was a weekly
comic.
Oh,
yeah, actually.
I did that every week for a year. Yeah. And then, so each chapter was a week's worth of work.
and then it came out as a book. But I got a lot of people saying, yeah, I read the first few, and I'm just going to wait for the book when it comes out.
Yeah. So I didn't know it was going to be a book. I didn't know it was going to be a book, but I was waiting until it was all done so I could I could read it.
Well, I wasn't sure it was going to be a book either. I just did everything in color and did it the way I wanted to do it. And And then I was hoping Chris and Brad would like it, actually.
Yeah, you, Hawaiian Dick did have Webster's. That's right. Yeah, talk about that, huh? Because you were actually, it was interesting that you were dismissing kind of the paperless.
For me, it was a promotion of that. Well, I don't know. Image, we were, you know, that's the first thing we'd ever done. So Image was like, could you do this, 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 and this? And we're like, sure, we can do all that stuff, you know, which may be why the book took so long to come out once we were going on. Because Stephen wouldn't say no initially. You know, he's a young creator. He's like, sure, you know, I can do Sunday style full color web strips weekly while I'm drawing 82 pages of the story, you know, but Image put up, well, actually, I'll tell you what happened is when we sent in the book, we thought it was going to be black and white because I thought Oni or Slave Labor or somebody would do it. But Stephen's color was so awesome.
Yeah.
I put in a couple sample pages. Actually, here's the reality situation is Oni Press was running full color Sunday strips on their website, web strips of their books. And I thought Oni might publish this book, so I did some, I had to do some full-color strips that I thought they could. It was like I was trying to slot it in for him, you know? And so we included that in the Image pitch. And when the Image contacted us, they were like, well, we think color's the way. And as a result, like I said, Stephen's got three Eisner nominations for his color. But, you know, it was their idea. They said, well, how about some promotional strips? And so we did. But all we did was print strips. I mean, you know, I don't know about, you can get in a whole discussion about taking advantage of the technology available. Web strips. We really just did Sunday style comic strips that were on a monitor. But a lot of people did see those, and as a result, they got into the book. On the flip side of that, I'm not sure that's the best way to promote a great genre. You know, they're not gag strips, but they're still like a punchline. You know, so
because of the format.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not really sure. I guess if people could get a feel for what we're Trench 5 has been so terrible. Now I'm not even sure how effective that was, because there's a big difference between what we were doing and four panel strips.
Anybody else? Well, no, I think it is. Well, I think it's an open question, because I think it's in transition, and we'll see what happens. And I do think that comics will survive the transition, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what form they take. And, you know, I mean, the monthly versus, you know, more collected things and more finished graphic novels, I don't really know. But, yeah, if anything, I think web comics are going to just take away the production cost, which will hopefully, you know, reflect something to the consumer as well. I mean, I don't know. And I say that just as a fan that's hoping to, you know, pay less than $3 for a 22-page comic book at this point. So, and that's why I like waiting for some of these guys when they do have their collected books, because they're always exciting. Any other final words from the panel as far as breaking in, gentlemen?
Give up?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I hope that's come, you know, been conveyed to you guys, because that's pretty obvious.
It's a test. I mean, I'll tell you what, my wife is, you know, artists over here going, yeah, my wife told me to quit my job and draw all the time, and my wife is insane, because I just knew I couldn't do anything else but write, and I knew I couldn't do, I was a journalism major, I knew I couldn't write news stories, and I didn't want to write novels, I wanted to do comics, you know, and once I got bug, you know, and I went and saw that, boy, just the opportunities are on. You could do, there's no budget, you can do anything you want, you know, and I found out that Image and Oni in these places, you could do, or self-publishing, whatever you wanted to do. I mean, there's almost no other medium that's like that, where you have that much freedom in what you do.
To convey your idea.
Right.
And really, your idea can go anywhere.
Without someone else stepping on your idea, you know.
Yep.
And so I sacrificed, you know, a lot, my wife even more. So it's like, yeah, you got to really want to do it. I mean, or else, you know, do it. You know, I mean, some people do have good jobs and do it on the side and succeed very well. But
people do not. We notice this.
Yes, there's no try.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is, it's just such a different business than so many other things, and I think that it's just an educational process where people still come up to us with their pitch and their resume, and the resume is meaningless.
Yeah, resume, what?
You know, but that's just a weird thing in our industry.
It's great about it.
It's wonderful. But, I mean, the thing is that it's just a different, it's almost like a different world, you know? So I actually, the best thing I think I did is I gave myself some time. I was like, okay, look, I went through all this school, you know, 12 years, and I was in college and grad school for another 8 years, so 20 years of school, to be able to do something for a living without hating. You know, so it's like, you got to give yourself some time to unlearn all that stuff that you know how to take tests that doesn't help you in the game, you know, you know how to get through and grin and bear it, but you got to learn how to do the stuff you really love. It's hard. It's really hard. And you got to give yourself some time. You got 20 years to do it their way. Now you got to do it your way. It's going to take you a while.
Sounds about right.
You know, so I mean, just stay with it and don't give up.
Yeah, but the work is what matters. That's what I love about comics. You can either do it or you can't. I don't care what your degree is in. I don't care. Yeah. If you can do it, you can do it. If you can't,
Yeah, and do, you know, make the book for yourself. Make yourself happy first. Make the book that you would consider, you know, the best. The kind of book when you walked into a store and took off the shelf and just had to buy it. And the perfect book, you know, just try to make it for yourself as ideal as possible. The perfect book.
Yeah, let me say something about that real quick. Is that I was always going to comic shops, and I found that I was actually looking for something.
Yeah.
That wasn't there.
Right.
And that was what I needed to do. It was like a combination of all these things. It's like, so think about
that's how.
If you want to do it, if you invest that much yourself and enjoy it that much, there's going to be an audience for it somewhere.
Yeah. It's like the world has, you know, all these guys, you know, generally. So it's like, but does the world have you? You know, now what do you have to say? You know.
Yes.
I really just want to be the next Jim Lee or Chris Claremont.
Well, there's no way you could do that anyway. Even if you wanted to. There's only one you. Right. And there's like that answer in there.
Yeah.
Who you are, you know?
Everything they've just said I can apply to the reason why I do my podcast and my comics podcast. And it's exactly that, Andy. I didn't hear what I wanted to hear in terms of what was out there in terms of coverage of comics. So that, you know, I think that really kind of caps it and brings it full circle. So as we hit the hour, I want to thank these guys, and I'm really glad that Christian and Andy were able to contribute as well, because I really think you got a very interesting cross-section, and hopefully if you guys have other individual questions, you'll go over and talk to them, because clearly they know what they're talking about in terms of breaking in. So
an hour left.
Thank you. Thank you. Exactly. 60 minutes and counting. So thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for coming.
Christian Slade, Matt Kint, and Andy Rutten of Top Shelf, and B. Clay Moore, and Art Balthazar of D.C., talking about how they broke into comics at the FX International Convention in Orlando last month. That'll do it for this episode of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, Word Balloon, you can find us all over the Internet. We're at myspace.com/wordballoon, comicspace.com/wordballoon. Of course, you can find us here at Newsarama. We're also at iTunes. And if you ever have any questions or comments about the show, just email me, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.